something they called policy. And when one time to see King Bird in his ambulance, which was a wagon that he could sleep in. He found that the Kiowas had moved away farther off, and he didn't get there. Night was falling. So he saw some tepee in the distance, an encampment, so he went to have shelter for the night. He knew he was in hostile territory of this White Wolf, chief of the Comanches, who had said he would kill Thomas Batty if he got a chance, because Thomas Batty was squealing on him. He was telling Washington how the Comanches were making raids, stealing cattle, and going down into Mexico, and raiding to get there was so reduced in the land they had, they couldn't support themselves on the little land they had. They had to have more land to hunt on. And sometimes they had to hunt cattle if they couldn't hunt wildlife. So this is White Wolf. Actually, he's White Wolf at a later date, because you see he's wearing a peace medal. He got to be a goodie later on. But at this time, he was a hostile. But Thomas Batty went to White Wolf's lodge and said he wanted to spend the night. And White Wolf said, "Where are you going to sleep?" And Batty was smart enough to say, "I'll sleep anywhere, any place you tell me." He wasn't going to play any tricks. So White Wolf said, "Well, sleep in your ambulance, in your wagon." So the next morning, Thomas Batty got all ready to go, but just waited. After a while, White Wolf came out and said, "Oh, you're clearing out, are you?" Batty said, "No, I'm going to say goodbye to you before I left. Thank you for the hospitality." This is a real thing with Indians. You are hospitable even to your enemy. If he's in, the enemy's in your charge, you protect him. So he invited him in for breakfast, and while they were eating, Thomas Batty saw that White Wolf's wife was getting dressed up in her finery, best clothes, and said her daughter too. And White Wolf said, "Will you take my wife and daughter to a certain place if it's on your way?" Thomas Batty said, "Certainly." So they got in his wagon with him and tied a horse on behind and went off. And they were accosted every here and there by a warrior out on the plains. And Mrs. White Wolf would say, "This is all right." So they go on. But after a while, she said, "Now I'm going to get out." And they got out and got on the horse and went home. But he was in safe territory then. They had simply given him safe passage out of hostile territory. These are some children in the Quaker school right in Oklahoma, a century ago. This is the Quaker church at Wyandotte, northeastern corner of Oklahoma. Right, this is the one for the Osage Indians in Hominy, Oklahoma. It's run like a church. This is where David Powell was the minister for some period of time. It's largely run by the local Indians now, although it is a mission station run by the Associated Committee of Friends of Indian Affairs. And this is the Kickapoo. They have a new church now, which I haven't seen. But the building in the background was built by a war camp, and was the only room where the tribal council could meet. They had sold off all their land. They had no relationship with Washington. If you don't own any land, you're not a recognized tribe. But they said, "We need room for a cemetery." And the friends had bought this land from the Indians, or been given it by the government. And so they gave them 15 acres of land. Well, now they had some land. Now they were eligible for recognition. Now they became a federally recognized tribe. They were eligible for grants from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They got, I think, $300,000 to build a community center and tribal offices and room for day school, day school, things like that. And also a baseball field and playground and cemetery too. So that's where we set them up. They're now a recognized tribe. This is inside Central Council House, the fourth one of the Associated Committees. Really a mission station, but it's a local church for anybody that lives there. Some of them are obviously not Indian. Now, American Friends Service Committee work. Here is a work camp in North Dakota at Mandan. They're having morning worship service on the hillside. And down in the middle distance, there is the cinder block house that they're building. And it's been bringing arts and crafts and out of that. It's not a community building. It's really not much of a community. That's a public, that's a Bureau of Indian Affairs school down there. And very few people live within sight. They come in by buses, but there are lots of people live around about. And so that'll be a very useful building. And here are the three affiliated tribes in North Dakota, Indian, Montana. Work camp is building some wood, earth lodge. That they, what they wanted, they use it for community purposes. Place to meet, also a place to bring tourists. We have a very nice museum next door. And the man standing in the doorway of the lodge is Adlai Stevenson. Well, of course, he's not the famous Adlai Stevenson. He's not even the famous man for whom Adlai Stevenson was named, who was Secretary of State many years, 100 years ago or more. But this Indian was named for the man who was Secretary of State years ago. And the woman in striped jersey in the foreground was the girl's counselor. And she liked the area so much that she stayed. She married a local man. She wrote a book with Standing Timber, the local Indian historian. She became a college professor and really made quite a life for herself out there in Montana. The service committee has brought together some college age students for some seminar with nationally recognized speakers at Radnor. And now we're up in Alaska. California, you're being set up a mission station at Kotzebue and Douglas before that. And here, I just have to be there at the time when they're having a quarterly meeting. A quarterly meeting is one afternoon, and the way, or one day, the way it was yesterday, over at London Grove. But maybe, I guess it's 5 days up at morning, noon, and night. And this is taken at night, about 10 o'clock. Well above the Arctic Circle. And although it's July, I think we're wearing our Arctis with the fur lining. In 1961, there was a national conference of Indians nationwide in Chicago. And in preparation for that, I was asked to set up a preliminary conference at Haverford for Indians from Virginia to Maine. And so we had about twice as many people there for a weekend. And it was a very profitable occasion. People present lived in local houses of friends who volunteered to put them up. The college provided the meals and the meeting place, and the Indian Rights Association paid the bill. Made a lot of friends there. This is at Westtown School commencement some 20 years ago. Over here is Albert Gazi. He's superintendent of schools in the large area of Navajo land. Hundreds of teachers, quite a position. He sent his oldest daughter to Westtown. He graduated last year. He has another daughter at Westtown right now. So that works in proof. I can't take time to read all that, but Ray Fatt, who is a retired Mohawk school teacher, knows friends and has been very friendly to friends. We asked him to speak at a quarterly meeting down in Downingtown one time. He drove all the way down to northern New York, Canada, sleeping out in his truck, and refused to have to pay his expenses. Well, I think we persuaded him to change his mind on that, but still, he didn't want to be paid for speaking to friends, and he's been very good friend to some of us. It's overly laudatory. But it was printed on a poster that he put out for an organization that he founded. And he was one of the founders of Aqua Sassy Notes, if you know about that. If you're interested in the Indians, you should know about it. I'll show you a copy if you want me to. That also started the White Roots of Peace, which relates to the Great Treaty of Great Seas, too. And the man in blue in the middle, Rory Oakwatch, and the leader, was the editor of the Aqua Sassy Notes, and he founded this group of White Roots of Peace that went around. I've been to School, Emory Prince College, and a great many other colleges, University of Pennsylvania, and Villanova, and Princeton, and all around here. He and his group have come to talk and dialogue with the students, put on their performance, which is sort of a dance, but it's not an aesthetic dance, it's a religious dance, and a ceremonial, and they interpret Dakota Dancing Lake and the Indian religion prior to Dancing Lake. A beautiful presentation. Here they are, nearly meeting time at Friends Central School, meeting with Quaker youth and doing it. And Dan Ketchumpa, the leader of the traditional Hopi, and Paul somebody whose name I can't pronounce, and Bob Haynes. And again, that same painting by Paul Domingo before it got cleaned up in St. Mary's. He asked me to set up a meeting in the 15th Street meeting house. And so I got as many people as I could together on short notice. And they introduced him. I thought he was going to give a social, political, legal protest complaint session. And he stood up to speak. He stood there quietly for at least 30 seconds. It seemed like a long time. And then he reached inside of his blouse and pulled out a little pouch of leather and reached in and got some pollen and sprinkled it on the carpet. And then was quiet again. After a while he spoke. This was a religious ceremony. Just as truly as any Quaker business is supposed to be, beginning to worship too. And after he spoke at some length, his interpreter told us what he had said, but it was very impressive. Here is the governor of Taos, came to Philadelphia to give their message, and his interpreter, Paul Bernal, who speaks English well and has the talk. Up in New York State, in the middle of northern New York State, Gadienka. Well, the whole area is supposed to be Gadienka, according to them. And they figured that New York took the land from them illegally. And they just moved in on some state-owned land that had been a summer camp. Well, it's a long story. I really can't take time to tell it now, I think. But Becky and I went up with as much as we could get in our VW bus of clothing from the American Friends Service Committee. And it was very warm to receive. The Council on Indian Affairs, now defunct, but served for many, many years. Lawrence Lindley, chairman of it, and about half the members who attended were friends. But it represents Indian organizations, labor organizations, church organizations, anybody, British Civil Liberties Union, anybody, women's clubs, anybody who was interested in Indian affairs. Two young people who worked for the Friends Committee on National Legislation, who were instrumental in getting the Indian help. In fact, wording it, but the bill for Indian help, which passed and served for a couple of years until, ran out of time, maybe, and then renewal of it was vetoed by Las Vegas. But it was extremely helpful while it existed. This is the advisory council through the Friends Committee on National Legislation for their Indian program. Bob and Lenore Haynes speaking to Indian children as they did on many, many occasions. Now these young men in Philadelphia, they're all from Iroquois reservations in New York State. And back in 63, was it? No, 70, 72, I guess. They were watching a movie being filmed in Philadelphia, and there was a practice in the police